This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you live from Portland, Oregon, and boy, in our second hour, Paul Ryan is going to be with us, not the Trump enabler in the House of Representatives, but the good Paul Ryan. He's with Common Cause. And we're going to be talking about Trump's totally legal tweet. In our third hour, Jamal Abdi is going to drop by. He's the vice president of the National Iranian Affairs Council. National Iranian American Council, NIAC. And, we're going to be talking about the sanctions. We're also going to get into how neoliberals are trying to break Canadian health care. But to start out today, because I am going to talk about these other things. I'm not going to talk about the fact that convicted criminal Joe Arpaio says he would accept oral sex from Donald Trump. Yes, Sasha Cohen did it, Baron Cohen. But what I do want to talk about is, how do you save the planet from reality TV watchers and Trumpsters? And are you one of those people who voted for Donald Trump and now regrets it? And if so, I'd love to hear from you. Our phone number is 202-808-9925. Do you now regret voting for Trump because of his racism? You know, his tweets about LeBron, his most recent, his recurring theme throughout his life, it seems, is that black people are stupid and stuff like that. I mean, this was the essence of the LeBron James, trashing both LeBron James and Don Lemon for being dumb and black. Is it because he lied that he was going to bring jobs back? And we've actually seen over the first 18 months of his presidency an increase in the number of jobs leaving the United States. Is it because he lied that he was the only Republican on stage who was going to protect your Social Security and Medicare, and the budget that they passed, or the tax bill that they passed, actually cuts by hundreds of millions of dollars the administrative staff for Social Security and Medicare, thus increasing your wait times and frustration and difficulty? And we're going to get into that, by the way, in the program, too. That whole issue of neoliberalism as sabotage, we're going to get into that in the next hour. Is it because he promised to tax the rich? He said, oh, my God, I'm going to pay more in taxes. I mean, a member of my family, people that I, my neighbors, when we lived in the marina in Washington, D.C., voted for Donald Trump after earlier supporting Bernie Sanders. And they voted for Trump because they believed these things. They believed that he was going to bring jobs back. They believed that he was going to protect Social Security and Medicare. They believed he was going to tax the rich. They believed he was going to drain the swamp and get the lobbyists out of Washington, D.C. Instead, he's put them in his cabinet and in charge of agencies. They believed that he was going to have a humane immigration policy, and now he's ripping children from their mothers. They believed that he would be somebody who would respond to emergency crises, unlike George W. Bush when Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans, and over 1,000 people, the vast majority of them African Americans, died. People believed that he wouldn't do that to another place, and now he's done it to Puerto Rico. And a lot of people are just saying, I regret voting for him because the guy's nuts. Look at his tweets. There's some news reports now that indicate we all know he watches at least a few hours of television a day. There's at least one news report out suggesting that he watches as much as 8 hours of television in a day. Jeremy Montanez was so regretful that he voted for Trump that he apologized to the entire country on CNN. He said, I want to apologize to the nation for my vote for him. This was on CNN's New Day program. And, really, he said it was the wrong thing to do. It was the biggest mistake I ever made. Montana's also called the president a racist, pointing to his lack of attention to Puerto Rico's devastation by Hurricane Maria as an example. But, it's not just saving us from Trump. How many of us got sucked in by this, back when I used to work Louise and I started two different ad agencies and built them up and sold them off. And I used to teach marketing and advertising for the American Marketing Centers. And, one of the things that when you're in the advertising business is that the main message of advertising is You are the most important person in the world. You need this. You deserve this. Right? That's the message that is embedded in most advertising, but it's also embedded in programming. I've told you the story many times of a study that I'm sorry, I don't have the study in front of me. This was in the 70s or 80s, and I heard this on NPR, and I've not been able to successfully find it, but I remember it very vividly. These guys, it was a group of scientists in Michigan, I believe it was at Michigan State University, or the U of M, and squirrels make nests for the winter, and they're a certain size, right? And so what they did was they found in the winter, and particularly you can see these nests in the trees, they look kind of like giant bird's nests. They're typically made out of leaves. So they went around and they added 20% to the size of a couple of the nests. And sure enough, by the next year, all the squirrels were making nests that were 20% larger. We are mammals, just like squirrels. We are wired to catch what's going on with the Joneses and say, hey, I need to do that too. I should do that same thing. So now comes this study from the London School of Economics and Political Science. This is not, this is not just some little thing, that some grad student did or, some speculation. This is an actual scientific study done by the London School of Economics, Department of Media and Communications, studying the responses of 487 British adults, ages 18 to 49. And what they found, it was masked as a memory and attention test. People didn't realize that they were being evaluated for their attitudes on whether poor people, injured people, disabled people, the working poor should have access to health care and things like that, should have access to basically a social safety net, long-term unemployment, or if, for that matter, the National Health Service in Great Britain should continue without further privatization. And here's what this is from the London School of Economics website itself, lse.ac.uk. Results showed a significant treatment effect of momentary exposure to materialistic media, this is one-minute ads, on both anti-welfare attitudes and support for anti-welfare policies. One intermittent minute of attention to common and typical materialistic media messages caused a significant increase in anti-welfare sentiments. And then you get to the TV viewing, and it's mind-boggling. They write, and again, I'm quoting from their report, participants were also asked about the frequency of their viewing of 9 TV shows, such as The Apprentice, X Factor, Keeping Up with the Kardashians, and Made in Chelsea. Results showed that those who also regularly watch shows such as The Apprentice and X Factor were more likely to hold, quote, stronger materialistic and anti-welfare attitudes than lighter consumers of these shows. Now, why would that be? They note, this is from the paper, cultural representations and endorsements of materialism, such as the promotion and glorification of fame, fortune, and conspicuous consumption, are particularly endemic in and promulgated by commercial media. They call this the materialistic media messages, MMMs, that are embedded in these programs like the Apprentice, Keeping Up with the Kardashians, Made in Chelsea. And they go on to say that people who watch these programs, increased exposure to these programs, quote, increases body dissatisfaction in women and decreases well-being in children. Heavy consumption of MMMs is related to, or in other words, reality TV, is related to increased levels of stress, life dissatisfaction, and anxiety. They go on to say, and I'm quoting from the study now, word for word, The Apprentice, Keeping Up with the Kardashians, and X Factor are replete with MMMs that are engineered to absorb audiences into the glamorous world of wealth and celebrity, and thus have a strong potential to function as cultivators of materialistic values and attitudes. If there's more emphasis on materialism as a way to be happy, this makes us more inclined to be selfish and antisocial, and therefore unsympathetic to less fortunate people. This study can contribute to explanations for why the UK's public support for welfare to aid the impoverished and unemployed has been decreasing during a time of rapidly growing wealth disparities, living costs, and rates of precarious and underemployment. In other words, as things are getting worse, you would think that people would say, hey, we're all getting in deeper and deeper trouble here. economically and socially, we should be looking out for each other. We should be helping each other out. And instead, what's happening is things are getting worse. People are saying, screw the working poor. Screw the working people, for that matter. We all want to be like Donald Trump and the Kardashians. I would add the question to this. Is the Trump presidency, where Trump has turned even the chairs in the press room gold, is the Trump presidency influencing average Americans who watch Fox so-called news and follow the Trump presidency?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, you know, were you influenced and are you regretful that you voted for Trump? We'll be back with your calls after this. And welcome back. Whoops. Just lost my screen there. There we go. Justin, in Fellersville, Pennsylvania. Hey, Justin, thanks for watching us on YouTube. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I want to talk about stopping the union busting and that sort of stuff. You went over something a little bit ago saying that the Republicans reversed something regarding people having to pay for unions and that sort of stuff.
Right.
So I'm kind of wondering.
It was called the Janus decision.
I'm wondering if basically lawyers can go in and say, okay, well, since you don't have to pay, I'm willing to represent you right now and that sort of stuff, and go in and try and get tons of people involved and that sort of stuff without paying, basically to pay later, like from like settlements and that sort of stuff. If that might work, if that might be a way to backfire on them.
If you're going to represent people, I mean, there's an issue at law here, Justin, and that is that if you're going to represent people, generally speaking, I suppose you could be a consultant, but if you're going to actually represent them, you typically have to be an attorney or an accountant. I mean, there are professions where you're representing your clients to the government and to other people, and or a labor union. Labor unions have there's this whole huge body of law that goes back to 35, the passage of the Wagner Act and the National Labor Relations Act. Actually, they're the same thing. It was called the Wagner Act, and the official title was the National Labor Relations Act. And what it did was it said that it is legal for a union to represent its employees and collectively bargain using the Commerce Clause and the right to contract found in the Commerce Clause in the Constitution. And so if you came in as anything other than an attorney, I mean, as an attorney, I suppose you could waive your fees or you could work out a deferred fee arrangement. But if you came in as anything other than an attorney, I don't know how that would work.
Okay, well, no, I'm just trying to get some ideas and basically hopefully inspire maybe one or two people to actually step forward and try to maybe make things backfire for what they've screwed up on.
Yeah, well, you know, in the Janus decision, what the Supreme Court said is that, you know, basically states can do to their public employee unions exactly the same thing they did to their private employer unions. And the reason that there's a difference, by the way, is that when the National Labor Relations Act was passed back in 1935, it did not cover government employees. The idea being, and the idea, by the way, is promoted by conservatives all the time, that government writes the rules, and so government employees who are theoretically the beneficiaries of those rules should not be represented by the institutions that are protected by those rules, that is labor unions. It's a specious argument, in my opinion, and because the government employees are not actually writing the legislation. You could say that the legislators are not covered, but legislators are typically not members of unions anyway, so it doesn't matter. But that was the argument. That's the argument that historically was made. And as a consequence of that, it wasn't until the 1960s, as I recall, during the Johnson administration, that Congress passed legislation allowing government employees to unionize. So, you know, and then, of course, Reagan started taking an axe to that when he busted the PATCO strikers. So, Justin, great idea, great sentiment, but I think that it would have to be done through the union. So the thing that we have to do, really, is get... This was a 5-4 decision, the Janus decision. We have to get the conservatives off the Supreme Court, and that means, you know, stop letting Republicans steal elections. So, Justin, thanks a lot for the call. Good talking to you. We'll be back with your calls right after this. Welcome back, Richard in Seattle. Hey, Richard, what's, did you vote for Trump or did you just know people who did?
I know a lot of people who did, Tom. By the way, hello. Love your show.
Thank you, Richard. In fact, I'm looking at our calls here, and it looks to me that not a single person was willing to call in and admit that they voted for Trump. actually, Louise said that a bunch of them did call in.
I think there's reason for that.
Yeah, Louisa said that a bunch of them did call in, but they were unwilling to go on the air. what a bummer.
I think it is a little missing the point in regards to people who voted for Trump, trying to give them a pass for actually regretting the decision. The reason being is because we knew about his racism. We knew about his con man act. We've known about him going about and defrauding the veterans organizations. None of this stuff is actually secret information. This is publicly accessible.
I agree, Richard, but those things that you're talking about, you say we know these things, we who are news junkies, we who are political junkies, we who pay careful attention to these things, the vast majority of Americans don't fit in that category. The vast majority of Americans are just working their butts off trying to get by, hanging out with their friends, spending time with their kids. They have a life, and not to say that news junkies don't have a life, but focus of their life is not the news or the Trump administration. Whereas for many of us it is. We're really concerned about the future of our democracy, and so I'm still willing to cut those people some slack. I mean,
the reason as to why I'm not really willing to give them that confession is in the same vein that. I don't like to give George Bush that concession that he wasn't all that bright when it came to his policies and procedures. And I'm talking about Junior. We try to give him a pass for being, oh, well, he wasn't that bright and he was the butt of many comedians' jokes during his presidency. Great. But the simple fact of the matter was his actions did have very real consequences.
And continue to.
It ended up in ruining, if not ending, quite a number of people's lives. And the simple the thing that's really annoying about it is, as far as Americans are concerned, we didn't really care too much about it because we weren't on the receiving end of it. Yeah. And I think that also plays into the whole Trump support regret, the whole buyer's remorse regarding his Trump supporters, in the fact that they didn't really care too much about it, and about Trump being racist, about Trump being extremely nationalistic, about Trump actually advocating or encouraging more extreme fascist elements to act out because he'd go about in supporting their legal fees. These supporters that experienced buyer's remorse didn't start experiencing that buyer's remorse until those policies started affecting them personally, which is kind of the same trait that you have towards with a lot of more right-wing, more conservative-minded individuals. Empathy really isn't one of their strong suits. So it's something that they don't actually start regretting until they become personally affected by it.
Yeah, it may be. And your talk about the Bush and his toxicity. He basically broke our military, too. One of my daughters sent me an article in the Military Times about how all these generals are now calling to bring back the draft because, it's just the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq just destroyed us. Richard, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. Jonathan in Detroit. Jonathan, it says here you voted for Trump and don't regret it. Do I have that right?
I don't. I don't, Tom.
Why not?
Because I think he's the change that we needed. I think it opened up a lot of voters' eyes to how corrupt our government is and how desperately we need change.
So what you're saying is that this is sort of the Susan Sarandon pitch for, vote for Trump, not Hillary, or don't vote at all. I'm not sure that she said exactly that in those terms, but that's how it was interpreted in the media, that Trump is going to screw things up so bad he's going to destroy the Republican Party. Is that what you're saying?
But Trump hasn't really destroyed the Republican Party that much. If anything, I think both parties are destroyed, and we need a multi-party system in this country.
I don't disagree that we need a multi-party system, but I don't think both parties are destroyed. I think the Democratic Party is starting to wake up from a kind of 20-year hangover from neoliberalism and returning to its FDR and LBJ roots, which I think is great. The Republican Party, you got people like we had Rick Wilson on yesterday, desperately trying to return to their Dwight Eisenhower roots and the Richard Nixon roots, for that matter, and they can't do it. But fascinating perspective, Jonathan. Thank you for calling and sharing your experience with us, and thanks for listening to SiriusXM. We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls. What a great topic. You know, do you, and for that matter, do you think, do you know people who watch a lot of reality television, and as a result, they've turned into right-wingers? We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Your media support group for We the People. It's the Tom Hartman Program, back with more of your calls right after this. Welcome back. Wow, ShareBlue Media has an amazing story by Eric Bollard. And, you know, Eric's a pretty solid guy. He's been writing for Media Matters for years and years. In fact, I think he might be even an executive at Media Matters, or one of the people who's involved with the company. He writes, a stunning, grifters are going to grift, and then they go to work for Trump. A stunning new expose from Forbes magazine reveals that Trump's Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, who, by the way, when he became Commerce Secretary, we were all told he's worth multiple billions of dollars, as much as $5 billion. Turns out he's worth $800 million. He lied about how rich he was. Anyhow, that Trump's Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross has been allegedly siphoning off money from his colleagues for years, lots and lots of money. And then they quote, this is a quote from Forbes, quote, and Forbes magazine, I mean, they source this. This is solid stuff. Those who've done business with Ross generally tell a consistent story of a man obsessed with money and untethered to facts. If even half of the accusations are legitimate, the current United States Secretary of Commerce could rank among the biggest grifters in American history. Over several months, in speaking with 21 people who know Ross, Forbes uncovered a pattern. Many of those who worked with him claim that Ross wrongly siphoned or outright stole a few million here and a few million there, huge amounts for most, but not necessarily for the Commerce Secretary. But all these allegations, which sparked lawsuits, reimbursements, and an SEC fine, come to more than $120 million. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Vicki in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Vicki, what's on your mind today?
Well, I think that there is a silent demographic group of people that who are already on board with a Democratic platform, but just because of who they are. Mm-hmm. I'd represent them today by letting you know that I only have a landline. I can't afford a cell phone. I don't have cable. So I watch ABC, CBS, NBC, period.
Right.
And I live on Social Security after 30 years as an RN, and the only reason why I own my home is because I worked enough overtime to double my income to buy one, yet I just had to do a reverse mortgage to keep my home. And my point is, you described the answer in several of your books. The people on the progressive left need to get together, get on mainstream media like an ABC station that's available to people without cable, just to counter all the fake news. So when people go to vote, they're voting from their experience and the truth that's presented in these major media stations. Had I not been a person that listened to Democracy Now! And your station for years, I wouldn't not have any information, because you don't get anything in, you know, currently on NBC, CBS, ABC, and PBS, very little to counter any of this. So there's a whole group of people that aren't being indoctrinated in fake media, but they are getting it kind of a no counter arguments against this stuff on the few media stations that are available. So what we need to do is make sure that we own one of those major stations, that people that don't have much money or resources can actually get the information they need.
I understand and absolutely agree with your sentiment, Vicki, but, you know, from my own experience, it's like you will not, if you watch the Sunday shows, or for that matter, if you watch anything right now, and you said you don't have cable, so you're not watching it, but if you were to tune into CNN or MSNBC and you see one of these, quote, political discussions, or you see any of the programs throughout the day, with a very rare exception in the evening primetime block, you will not see actual progressives on television. You just, as even as guests, much less as hosts. And even the progressive hosts are very narrowly circumscribed in the topics they can talk about. They can't talk about corporate mergers. They can't talk about net neutrality, or at least not on any kind of a regular basis. They can't talk about the corporate dominance. They can't talk about neoliberalism. These giant corporations that own our media don't want to hear that. My own experience, I had a conversation a number of years ago, 5-6 years ago, maybe longer than that. No, it had to be about eight or nine years ago. With a senior executive at one of the networks that you mentioned, about being a host for them. And, you know, basically what came out was that I was too far left. Whatever the hell that means. I mean, I support Medicare for all. I support strengthening Social Security. I'm not as far left as Franklin Roosevelt was. Well, actually, I am. But America is right there, too. And, you know, similarly, when I was supporting Bernie during the primary, and of course, I supported Hillary after she won the primary, right up to the day of the election, worked really hard to support her. But when I was supporting Bernie, we even had a threat from one of our radio stations saying, you continue supporting Bernie, we're going to take you off the air. We basically said, you really don't want to do that. You know, you're shooting yourself in the foot. But this is the media of the United States, particularly the media that's owned by giant corporations and some of these very, very conservative, very right-wing corporations, do not want a progressive message out there, because the so-called moderate message in the Democratic Party anyway, but I would say also in the Republican Party, the so-called moderate message is really a corporatist message. It's really, I'm a moderate politician. That means I take money from big corporations, I take money from billionaires, and occasionally I do something that's sort of progressive, but certainly not always. That doesn't seem moderate to me. That seems sellout to me, but that's what the media wants.
And that's my point. And that's my point. And that's why I say, you've written in your books a long time ago, a group of right-wingers got together and decided they wanted to control mass media. And they were able to do it. I'm not saying we can do that before this next election. I'm just saying that's what must be done.
Yeah, I agree. And this is why, I wrote an op-ed a month or so ago saying to Tom Steyer, the billionaire who's supporting the movetoimpeach.com website, Tom, if you really want to have an impact on the American elections going forward, and not just this one, but, for decades, instead of pouring millions of dollars into trying to impeach Donald Trump, that'll happen, when it becomes obvious to every American that it should happen. Instead, buy one of the big radio networks. Clear Channel was for sale at the time that I wrote that op-ed. And I was, I said, buy Clear Channel. Of course, that didn't happen. Vicki, thank you for your call. It's a very... poignant and trenchant point that you're making, and thank you very much. Steve in Black Star, Virginia. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind today?
Yes, Tom, it's excellent to listen to your show. I mean, I'm getting a whole new education every day.
Thank you.
But one of the things that really bothers me is when you talk to one of these fence posts, like the guy that called you last Thursday and was whining about, I don't want to give you money. Why do I have to give anybody money for Medicare for all?
Right.
And it's like, they don't seem to worry about the fact that the billionaires have taken so much money from the working class people for all of these years. And it's like, they're whining about a dollar.
Yeah.
And the billionaires ought to be paying.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And this is, and this reflects a basic lack of understanding of how actually our economic system works. And what these programs cost. I mean, you're spending, the average taxpayer in the United States is paying somewhere on the order of around $2,000 a year in corporate subsidies. We're subsidizing just the oil industry in the United States to the tune of $300 billion a year, with oil depletion allowances.
Well, shouldn't the corporations actually be subsidizing Medicare so that we could all have health care?
Well, right now they're subsidizing private health insurance. Why shouldn't they subsidize public health insurance? The majority of Americans who get health insurance get it through their employer. And
so many people are busting their butts and have nothing to show for it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's absolutely true. And that's why this kind of populist revolt that Donald Trump pretended to be leading and that Bernie Sanders actually was leading, and that, for that matter, Hillary Clinton ran on, that the Democratic Party adopted it with the platform that she ran on in 2016. That populist, progressive populist message that Trump tried to co-opt, That's a winning message, and that really works. And you put your finger exactly on why, Steve. Very well. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Leonard in Pasadena, California. Hey, Leonard, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I've noticed that Donald Trump talks about fake news, and maybe he's right. It's all owned by billionaires. Now, how about we have a news station that is owned by the masses and on the major station that tells the truth and all just the truth and the truth that pertains to the masses?
Well, there is a television network like that. It's called Free Speech TV. It's a nonprofit. Our show is on it right now. And it's all over the country. It's on Dish and DirecTV, Dish Network and DirecTV, the two satellite networks. It's available on cable systems around the country. Not all, but a few. It's on Sling. It's on Hulu. It's on Roku. It's on, you know, it's all over the place, right? And so there is a TV network like that. It's just that because it's a nonprofit and runs on a little tiny budget, I mean, I think it's a $3 to $5 million a year budget for the entire network. They don't have the kind of money necessary to really promote themselves, to get out there and run big ads on other networks and that kind of thing. But, you know, I hope that one day they reach that point because it's really a great network. So we do have, you know, the seeds planted for this, Leonard. You know, where it's going to go, you know, we'll see. But we need to be supporting it. And then SiriusXM, of course, has given us an entire channel, the Progress Channel that you're listening to right now. And that's pretty cool, and I'm very grateful to them for that. So there are, you know, there are some places where people can get good, progressive information and news all day long. Leonard, thank you a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to SiriusXM, to the Progress Channel and SiriusXM. We'll be back. It's 45 minutes past
the hour.
You're
listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
More of your calls right after this. You know, hey, Trump voters, you know, the whole bunch of you have called and then wimp out at the last minute. Stay on the line. I'll put you on the air. I won't pick on you. And welcome back. Jesse in Miami. Hey, Jesse, what's up?
Hey, hi, Tom. Hey, we got the worst die-off on fishes in the Southwest Florida here.
The worst? I'm sorry, say it again. Fish?
We had the worst die-off from sea life.
Die-off, yeah, that was the word I missed.
Florida.
Uh-huh.
And we have the biggest wildfires in California ever.
Wow.
It really amazes me that the Democrats is not getting in front of this.
Mm-hmm.
Trump jumped on Brown, the governor, saying, you know, he's not using his water right and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, you look at the real big picture, what happened to New Orleans, what happened to Puerto Rico, what happened to Detroit. It's like gentrification of the planet through natural disaster.
Yes.
How do you...
I agree with you, Jesse, and I'm pretty sure you're familiar with this. I think we've talked about it before. Naomi Klein wrote a book about this, about disaster capitalism, and how, you know, capitalists actually use natural disasters to increase their own wealth and power. And, you know,
yeah.
and Trump is absolutely doing that. And when he tweeted about that, he was actually, what he was tweeting about was the snail darter, right? This small fish that the California rivers you know, have to accommodate. And because of the Endangered Species Act, and the billionaire industrialists and the big corporations don't like that. They want to consume all that water, and you know, it's just he wants and the fact that some of our forests, like the redwood forests, are protected, and you've got, you know, logging companies that are salivating at the thought of, you know, cutting down the redwood forests. So,
well, can I jump to a point that we was picking up on before, talking about a universal basic income?
Sure.
If the Democrats could really use this climate change for try to get a universal basic income, because if people had a basic income, they wouldn't have to be cutting down the last tree or fishing out the last fish and focus on repairing the damage that's been done by our greed.
You're right, but that's kind of a two-step logic process. I think that the one-step logic process, I mean, you know, you're going from climate change is causing these problems, which is then exacerbating wealth inequalities and hurting, you know, working people. I would say that the easy way for Democrats to message climate change is to say, we want cleaner air. Donald Trump just gave us dirtier air. We want cleaner water. Our rivers need to be cleaned up. We don't want our children poisoned anymore. The National PIRG, the Public Interest Research Group, just came out with this thing about all the poisons in childhood toys. I'll get into that later in the program. But these kinds of messages that, you know, if we clean up the environment in a way that's going to mitigate climate change, it's going to reduce the impact of climate change, we are also making the environment better, safer, cleaner, healthier for us. And Trump is trying to co-opt that safer message by saying, well, if you have crappy gas mileage, people will drive less because their gasoline will be too expensive. Therefore, we should do away with the mileage requirements, which is nuts. I mean, it's just nuts. But the Republicans have fallen for it, Jesse.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks a lot, Jesse. Thanks. Yeah, okay. Thank you for watching us on Free Speech TV there in Miami. I appreciate it. We'll be back. It's coming up on 10 minutes before, 10 minutes before the hour. Stick around. It's the Tom Hartman Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, not a chance. Come on, give me a break. Ray in McHenry, Illinois. Hey, Ray, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's up?
Yeah, I'd like to try to explain in a simple way why you get the results you did. That study in Britain you talked about, where people who watch materialistic things started to get very selfish. You know, there's a thing called, a tendency in humans called demandingness, where they start to think they need things they simply want, demand what they simply desire. Well, imagine if you and I were in a underwater tank or in space and we had to share an oxygen tank. Now, I like to think that you and I would probably try to find a way to share it as long as possible. What happens is it starts to run down, though. What might one of us or both of us start to do if we started to realize that we're running out of air? And I think those, what you and I might tend to do as human beings to survive, is kind of what gets simulated by, you know, by encouraging people to think they need things they simply want, which is what advertising does. And people start to get demand. Even modern life makes people demanding, because as you get things all the time, very easily come to you, then you start to think you need them more. It's kind of like what happens to a kid. We spoil kids, where we get things to them too much, too often, and then they overreact emotionally to not getting those things. And I think that's what, that explains why you see that the results you were talking about earlier in that British study.
Yeah, that's an extraordinary metaphor. That's an extraordinary metaphor, Ray. And it raises the question. I mean, you know, egalitarianism is wired into us. Self-sacrifice is wired into us. But so is survival. And so these are two very, very powerful instincts that are literally part of our DNA. And it would be fascinating. Obviously, it's not the kind of study that you could do. It would violate every rule of ethical science out there. But it would be fascinating to know if you and I, Ray, were on the bottom of the ocean and we knew that it was going to take us 20 minutes to get to the surface without the bends, and we had 5 minutes worth of air, or let's say 10 minutes worth of air, which would be 20 minutes if one of us was dead, which one of us would say, okay, I'm going to take the air away from the other, or which one of us would say, you know, you can have my air. I'll just die right here so that you can live. And I wonder to what extent that might have to do with the relationship that we had. I mean, if you were my brother, or if you were my son, or if you were my father, would I be more inclined to sacrifice myself than if you were my neighbor?
Or if you were somebody who I perceived as being the other.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wonder, see, what I'm trying to say is, this is exactly what Trump and Republicans and the oligarchs who are like Copes and stuff, this is what they're encouraging people to do. They're encouraging to look at the world this way, that, you know, somebody is taking something away from you that you need.
Right.
And that's what they're triggering all these, you know, this anti-immigrant, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's all zero-sum thinking. You know, there's only a limited amount of stuff to go around, and we need to grab all we can. And if those people come from Mexico, they want some of our stuff, you know. Yeah, yeah, I got it.
You really have to fight your natural tendency to plug into that survival instinct.
Yeah.
You know, it really takes a lot to fight that.
And most people can't do that, particularly in the face of all this media. Ray, thanks for the call. That's a very thought-provoking call. Very, very, you know, a brilliant observation. Pete in Elmhurst, Illinois. Hey, Pete, what's up?
Hi, Tom. You promise you're not going to beat me up?
I promise.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought I'd take a chance and see if what a businessman could do as president of the United States. The only thing was, I didn't know the guy was empty inside morally. He was like a Terminator.
Yeah. Yeah, a very close member of my family voted for Donald Trump, and I don't want to out him on national television and radio, but basically his thinking was, things have been going downhill since Reagan's presidency, and we need a change agent. We need somebody who's going to shake things up, and he may be a fool, but he's saying the right things. He's saying he's going to protect the little guy. He's going to bring back the jobs. He's going to raise wages. He's going to raise taxes on rich people. And so what the hell? I'll take a chance on that. And he's regretting it too, Pete. So,
I didn't realize that he was also super racist. That never came out anywhere.
Yeah. Well, if you lived in New York, you would have known that. But you live in Illinois. He's been around New York politics for a long time. And his whole thing with the Central Park Five and all that stuff, it was pretty clear, but like I said earlier, I think a lot of people just didn't have enough information to really make an informed choice, and that's why I think this election that's coming up in November is going to be a really big deal, because now we have the information, and so now the question is, outside of the basically white racist base, who else is going to vote for candidates that Donald Trump has endorsed and supports? Who's going to vote for Republicans who are on Trump's side? And all these Republicans are scared to death of Trump. They saw what happened to Jeb Bush and everybody else, and they're like, whoa, don't do that to me. And the anti-Trump Republicans are all resigning, Jeff Flake and Bob Corker and others. And I'm increasingly thinking there's going to be a wipeout in November. But, I've been wrong before, so who knows?
Well, even though I'm a Republican, I hope you're right. Something's got to get shaken up. I'm a moderate Republican. The conservatives are going nuts. There's something wrong with them.
Yeah, I agree. Well said, Pete. Thank you very much for sharing your experience with us and your perspective. It's great to hear from you. Scott in Mission, Kansas. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. It's been a while. Well, I wanted to talk to you about Democratic strategy, because I think one thing that happened today is the Kansas primary.
Mm-hmm.
And I was an independent until I changed my vote over the summer. And the reason I did that is because Brent Welder is running for U.S. Kansas 3rd District, and his campaign messaging on Medicare for All and getting money out of politics was effective in me wanting to come out and vote for him in the primaries to ensure that he was the nominee.
So you changed from independent to Democrat so that you could vote for a progressive change agent who happened to be a Democrat?
Yes.
Yeah. See, I think that as the Democratic Party embraces these policies, which are nothing more than old Democratic policies, this is what Lyndon Johnson was all about. It's what Harry Truman was all about. It's what Franklin Roosevelt was all about. As the Democratic Party embraces its roots again, I think the Green Party is getting wiped out. I think that independents who were inclined to be progressive but not to be corporatists are jumping back into the Democratic Party in huge numbers. And we just had a call from a Republican. Republicans are saying, yeah, go for it, Democrats, yes. I think that's wonderful. Yeah, I think it's wonderful. Scott, thanks for the information and thanks for the thought. Spot on. We'll be back. Boy, a lot going on today. Let's see, who's up next? Oh, it's going to be Paul Ryan. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.